we can do this so well, if we can do this so right, all the strangers that came out to greet us in D.C., all the folks here back at home, the clockwork that this whole operation worked, the memorials, how is it that we're not more unified? How is it we're not more together? I'm overwhelmed by that.
From the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. This is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
Don't tell me what to do. I don't have to open the windows, newsman. Just saying. It's been a minute.
Yeah. Hey, have you noticed with all the rain and the humidity, have you been looking over your shoulder? Just waiting for a bomb to go off.
I debate whether we should even say this out loud. Right? It's like the jinx. Like, don't talk about it.
Well,
maybe, it's been pretty good.
Maybe the question should be, well, when should we prepare for it?
That is absolutely the question.
When should we prepare for the mosquito takeover?
Okay, you said
which is going to happen at some point, right? It almost has to.
Eric and I started talking about this because we both sort of looked at each other. You brought it up to me, but I'd had the same thought. All of this rain, as wet as our spring and early summer have been, it's been pretty nice. No mosquitoes. Yeah. Where are the bugs? We talked all about the cicadas all year.
Tick, 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 tick. I just keep waiting.
They're there,
boom,
right?
Boom! It's going to show up a mushroom cloud.
And carry you away.
All right. So we had to get to the bottom of it. We reached out to PJ Leash, UW entomologist, to get his take. What's the deal? When can we expect or when should we be worried about a mosquito explosion?
Well, a couple of things could be going on, and it really depends on where you're located in the state. Now, first of all, as you mentioned, we've had a lot of rain, and we know mosquitoes need rain for their juvenile stages to develop. So from a certain point of view, that clock is ticking. We have set the stage. They have what they need. In some areas, the mosquitoes are already out in force. In other areas, it's still a little quiet, but they could be coming.
What other ingredients might we need, PJ, to outside of the moisture to have a bumper crop of mosquitoes?
Well, again, we need that moisture, but another factor is time and temperature as well. So the warmer it is, the more quickly mosquitoes can develop from the egg stage through the larval and pupal stages to the adult stage. But one interesting factor, especially in urban areas and suburban areas, has to do with some of our infrastructure, specifically rainwater catch basins. And if you keep getting regular rainfall, what it can sometimes do is you have rainwater sitting in those catch basins, and you can get mosquito larvae developing in there. But if you keep getting regular rains, it can actually flush some of those out. And that's really hard sometimes to figure out exactly what the overall impact of that is on local mosquito populations. But sometimes there can be some interesting dynamics with that, where you get so much rain, it keeps flushing some of the larvae away, and they could actually perish as a result.
Really? So the rain is actually potentially helping
here. There's a sweet spot, right? Like, you want a bunch, but not too much. I bet you're exactly right on that.
Right. And again, there's a lot of little variables that are kind of tugging at this too, because there are certain mosquitoes that like to develop in habitat like that. There's other ones that prefer different bodies of water. That could be a drainage ditch. It could be containers in a yard. You know, that could be a bird bath, even a low-lying spot in a tarp. There's other ones that prefer areas like cattail marshes or bogs, and those might not be affected as much by regular rainfall. So my impression is we have had what we need to get mosquitoes, and it's probably only a matter of time before they come out in greater numbers.
Oof. Do we know, are there regions of the state where it's already hot?
Yes. I have had a lot of calls and reports from northern parts of the state, which isn't too surprising in my opinion, because there's so many lakes and boggy areas in the North Woods that there's seemingly always mosquitoes up there this time of the year. Also recently, though, I have spent some time in the Driftless area in the southwestern part of the state looking for periodical cicada sightings. And boy, you get into the woods in places like Iowa County, western Dane County, even in west of there, and the mosquitoes are pretty bad there at the moment. But you get into more urban areas like Madison, Middleton, where I live, and it's a little bit quieter. The mosquitoes are out, but not absolutely awful, but you get out in the woods more and they can be really bad in some parts of the state.
You said calls and reports. Are people, who's calling you?
Are they like weather spotters?
Yes.
Well, a little bit. I mean, yeah. My main role here, I run the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, but I get a lot of emails and calls from folks around the state with insect observations. And so that helps me get a better idea of what's going on in the state.
Just regular people, PJ? Just like regular old people?
In some cases, yes. In other cases, it may be individuals that are, say, pest management professionals that are out making the rounds to do their daily jobs, and they'll see some interesting observations and have a call with me just to see if anyone else is reporting that as well.
So just like our friends at the Weather Center who get the personalized request for forecasts, you get the personalized call about the hairy caterpillar that's been found in someone's backyard.
I do get those calls sometimes.
Or the wedding, right? We're having an up north wedding. What's the mosquito update?
Hey, PJ, you mentioned the cicadas. Have you eaten any cicadas?
You know, I have tried them. We actually had an outreach event in Lake Geneva earlier in June. And we partnered with a local restaurant. They collected a small numbers of cicadas to make some little appetizers and desserts and things like that. So I get to try a few things, and I even got to try a beer that was made with some dried cicadas in it. So I've tried them.
Okay, you mentioned you tried them. Did you like anything or no?
You know, they were pretty good. And the analogy I would make is if you took a small shrimp and you fried it up so it was nice and crisp. It maybe had a little bit of an earthy, maybe a nutty flavor. But the things that I tried, it really was quite good.
Hey, where are we at with the cicadas now? Eric was just in Lake Geneva area and had earlier reported that it was loud and now
them.
Not so much.
Yeah, we're definitely on the downswing. And if you think about it, Lake Geneva area, we had our first report back on May 17th. When the adults come out, they live for about a month. Now you have some adults that come out a little bit earlier or later than others. So your total window of time is maybe 4 to 6 weeks. So we are very rapidly coming to a close of cicada season in the state. Within areas like Lake Geneva, I know it's definitely gotten quieter. There's still some out there, but those will be disappearing here within the next week or so. And a little bit areas a little bit farther north, like Sauk County, where we have some cicada activity, those might be around another perhaps two-ish weeks, but their days are numbered as well.
Will these storms that have rolled through, like Lake Geneva got hit hard, a tornado in there in Fontana, Williams Bay area that blew all those trees down and blew branches that cicadas had chewed on or whatever, will that affect the bumper crops 17 years from now?
Yeah, that's a great question and really hard to tell. I mean, in general, we know the cicadas are associated with trees. The eggs are laid in branches. The young juveniles drop down to the ground. They go in the soil. They feed on the roots of trees. And those trees need to be there for long periods of time. Now, if it's a tree that lost a branch and the rest of the tree can do okay, I would expect those to be fine. If you had an area where the trees were just completely taken down and those trees have to be removed, then cicadas associated with those particular trees might die out if those trees are just cut and those roots die, because again, they need those trees to be present for long periods of time. But when I look at the bigger picture, if you lose a tree here, a tree there, there is a very large, robust population in the Lake Geneva area. So I suspect the overall impact would probably be relatively minor from this.
UW entomologist PJ Leach, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me today.
Couple of takeaways there. One, it sounds like the rain may have helped some of us as far as the mosquitoes go. And two, he says the clock is ticking. So if you don't have the mosquitoes, you're going to get them.
A number of people on the WTMJ talk and text line want to know where we are.
Because they got them?
I got eaten alive cutting grass in Fond du Lac last night, Fond du Lac County. I don't know where you are, but I'm getting eaten alive. They're all over my farm in Slinger. I live off I-94, 164 in Pewaukee, can hardly walk out the door.
Oh, man.
Without being bombarded with mosquitoes.
The mosquito wave is already here.
Yeah, so it must just be a little bit closer to the city.
Yeah, maybe we're getting a little bit lucky. We can hold out just a few more days. So the mosquitoes are likely coming, it sounds like, from PJ Lee's, too, that the cicadas, here we go, the door is shutting on the cicadas.
Do I have to retire the song, then?
Oh.
My little... Oh, here you go. The cicadas?
This might be the end. Is this it?
Could be. Breaking news and sad news to pass along. We've told you about the incident at Lincoln Hills, the school for school and prison for juvenile boys in northern Wisconsin, where a couple of staffers were attacked by an inmate there. One of those staffers has died.
Yeah, 16-year-old boy first assaulted a 25-year-old woman in the residence hall. She was taken to a hospital, treated, and released. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's got the story. That teenager then assaulted a second staff member who hit his head on the concrete. Now, when we first heard this story break on Tuesday, the staffer was said to be in critical condition, but this morning the Journal Sentinel is reporting that he is confirmed to be, was confirmed to be brain dead after hitting his head on the concrete as a result of that assault.
Remember that time when we were closing Lincoln Hills? I mean, go back to the Walker administration, and then Governor Scott Walker took a lot of criticism, saying this particular, is prison the right word? I guess juvenile prison, if you will, was not safe. The conditions were terrible. It was understaffed. It was all this stuff, and there was a lot of blame put on Governor Walker. And then it was decided to leave late in his second term. And, oh, okay, we're going to fix that. We're going to ultimately close Lincoln Hills. Nothing has happened since. There's this idea of putting a youth facility here in Milwaukee that would house, what, just a couple of dozen inmates? That won't entirely solve the problem. Meanwhile, this facility there still continues to have problems. Not good for the inmates, certainly, but also not good for the men and women who work there.
Right.
If they're going to be under assault. And that's one of the things that you have as a result, perhaps, of understaffing. Things are not safe for people to work there. And then that's a problem that just gets worse. The worse it gets, the worse it gets, right?
The staffer, 49 years old, again, died from his injuries. The assault remains under investigation by the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office, the DOJ, the DCI, State Patrol, and the Lincoln County DA's office as well.
8:30 on Wisconsin's Morning News. On Wisconsin's Morning News. This morning, WikiLeaks guy Julian Assange. I was going to say back in the arms of his wife, but he married her while he was behind bars.
That's right. So yeah. But back home in Australia.
So back in her arms, or in her arms once again, or for the first time ever, or whatever, however that's playing out.
Anyway.
But he out.
14 years is ridiculous. 5 years in high security prison. You know, he's not a terrorist as far as I know.
Yes, that's one of the many that were on hand to welcome Assange back to Australia. He is now home.
Here in Canberra, Julian Assange is now far removed from the public eye. His wife and his father are here to greet him as a free man. His brother says he will rest.
Going to take it easy for a little bit. They say it was an attack on journalism when in 2010 he released documents that indicated a lot of what the U.S. was doing behind the scenes across the world and whatnot.
Yeah, that's... It's a tough one. Obviously, we deal in the realm of public information. We try to find things out that people are keeping secret, and we try to share them with people. However, there is, if you're a patriot, there are some secrets that you think people ought not know, and so they're a tough one. And then, how serious was it? How serious was the leak? The back and forth, the locking him up for all these years. Then, which embassy was he at? Wasn't he at an embassy for years as well?
Yes.
He was over.
Within London?
I believe it was in Britain, right.
Yeah.
But he was in someone's embassy to Britain.
Right. No, you're right.
And then I think he kind of overstayed his welcome there.
Like, all right,
sure
time to go.
He was anyway.
Moving on to Russia. The first American journalist to be arrested on espionage charges in Russia since the Cold War is now officially on trial. It's Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gerskovich. His trial has officially begun today in a Russian city about 1,000 miles from Moscow.
Evan Gershkovich was put on trial behind closed doors in the Russian city of Yekaterinburg, about 1,000 miles from Moscow. The media was briefly shown the Wall Street Journal reporter in a glass cage, his head shaved. Gershkovich has spent more than a year in detention on espionage charges that the US and Wall Street Journal condemn as fabricated. The Wall Street Journal's editor forcefully denouncing the trial as bogus.
That's ABC's Patrick Grieville there. So most experts believe that Gershkovich, he was an American hostage that was seized in order for the Kremlin to trade, right? They'll use him to negotiate for somebody else. So what we've learned here from Beth Knobel, she's a journalism professor at Fordham University, former Moscow bureau chief for CBS. The sooner there's a verdict, potentially, could mean the sooner there's a chance that he comes back home.
Russia doesn't typically trade any prisoners until after they've been convicted. Once Evan Gershkovich is found guilty, and there's every reason to think that he will be convicted in this closed trial, then the Russians could finally move forward with some kind of deal or prisoner swap that would lead to Gershkovich's release.
Now, who knows if the U.S. would play ball with that. He is accused of being ordered by the CIA to collect secret evidence regarding Russian tank manufacturing. It's something that he and everyone else, the Wall Street Journal, the government has denied.
You know, these prisoner swaps also, it's never apples to oranges when we're trading with Russia, right? We get a basketball player and they get some organized criminals or whatever. Same thing here. We'd have to trade a journalist who's being held on trumped up charges,
right,
which is widely believed. I guess we don't know for sure. Please see earlier story about WikiLeaks if you're wondering for sure. So wouldn't put anything by the CIA in terms of spy activity in Russia. That said, everybody here associated with this particular journalist says, no, this guy was on the up and up. He was just plucked off the street for exactly this sort of thing. But right, the trade never works out equal for the U.S., what we have to give up in terms of whom we get back. But those are our people over there, and you got to find a way to get them. 843 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
Stars and Stripes Honor Flight recently flew its 75th mission since its inception. By the way, that's incredible. Just
mission
that.
75.
Since its inception, Stars and Stripes has flown more than 10,000 veterans to Washington, D.C. Now, this most recent flight had a passenger with a voice that you might recognize, might know this voice. WDTMJ's John Mercure has more.
A hero's welcome in Washington, D.C. for 60 Southeast Wisconsin veterans. One of those vets is Lee LaHargue, an Air Force veteran who was in Vietnam from 1964 to 68.
This is really amazing to me. I mean, it's very emotional, and it's really great. I just can't believe the outpouring and the welcoming that we're getting and the people that really, really seem to care. It's amazing to me.
Each veteran is accompanied by a guardian, someone who watches over them all day, just kind of make sure they have everything they need. You just might know Lee's guardian.
The kids, the bands, all of that stuff, that those folks, they don't know us, and they came out there to make that special for us. That was cool.
That's Vince Vetrano, the host of Wisconsin's Morning News and Lee's son-in-law. More from Vetrano in a minute, but first Lee's story. Oh, by the way, Lee had never been to Washington, D.C. The National Mall provided a sunsplash backdrop for our conversation about Vietnam.
It wasn't good over there when I was there. We worked hard, worked 12-hour shifts and 7 days a week.
Lee had a top-secret intelligence clearance. He was a photo interpreter. U-2 spy planes and the supersonic SR-71 Blackbird took pictures. They were developed, and then Lee and others told military leaders what they were looking at. The days were long.
Every day was a little bit stressful.
But that wasn't the hardest part.
What was the toughest part about being away for the United States?
Being away. My time away seemed like it went real slow. Just being away was a problem.
Shortly after our conversation about the 60s, Lee and Vince head over to the Vietnam Wall.
Thankful for the life that I've had and been able to have, and a lot of it is the sacrifice of these guys here.
58,000 names etched in black Bangalore granite.
kind of heartbreaking. You think that all those guys sacrificed, and what do we really get out of it? You know, they died for what they were told to do, but it's kind of a shame so many had to go.
A steady hand, an encouraging word. Vetrano helps Lahargue tackle a day that's at the same time somber and celebratory.
I didn't serve, and all these years later, there's maybe a little bit of regret there. I wondered about it, I thought about it, but never seriously pursued it. So, you know, if there's any way that I can contribute to an experience for our veterans that is of value to them, I guess that's a little something that I can do. That's where it hits me personally.
For many Vietnam vets, the day hits hardest at the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Cut! Shoulder!
At Arlington National Cemetery.
Oh!
I know a few guys that were over there and some that won't come here, and so I'm kind of representing them, I think.
Vetrano tells me today's different than all of his other trips to Washington.
We've been to D.C. a number of times, but this time with a purpose to serve Lee and to serve all these vets. So that value added to the day today is really special.
Eventually, it's back to the airport.
Mail for Ward, James Ward.
In flight, Vetrano is pressed into service.
I have mail for Joe Krupa.
Honor Flight does an old-fashioned mail call with letters from loved ones.
Pretty emotional. This is amazing. It's unbelievable.
After an hour and a half flight, it's time for a hero's welcome back in Milwaukee. Hugs and high fives, smiles and tears, a recognition and homecoming that's long overdue.
Of course, seeing the memorials was great, but the people that met us in D.C. and then the people that are meeting us here, that's the big homecoming. It's great.
Vetrano told me he felt pride and gratitude, and as he choked up, he told me he also felt sadness.
If we can do this so well, if we can do this so right, all the strangers that came out to greet us in D.C., all the folks here back at home, the clockwork that this whole operation was, the memorials, how is it that we're not more unified? How is it we're not more together? I'm overwhelmed by that. Boy, we sure feel broken sometimes, and this made me feel opposite of that.
And that's how an honor flight is supposed to feel. John Merkier, WTMJ News.
Now, Dr. Kent was in before, and he made fun of me for choking up there at the end.
I think he was teasing you about respecting you, too, I think.
If you haven't been, certainly if you have, as I indicated, if a veteran asks you to be a guardian for an honor flight, that's a duty that you have, and you got to do it, and you will be very much rewarded. In addition, though, if you've not gone out to one of these homecomings, which anybody can do. These honor flights come at least a half a dozen a year,
yep.
And they come back into Mitchell International here in Milwaukee, and anybody can go out there and cheer for these men and women when they come back and get off the plane, and it makes the experience for them. And so I would encourage anyone who hasn't done that to go out there. And then talk to me about whether or not I had right. a place being choked up. 8:54 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
WTMJ, W277-CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
WTMJ forecast sponsored by Dave Drake Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. Isolated showers this morning, mostly clear by the afternoon and a high of 80 degrees. Windows open tonight with low temperature back down to 58. Want to leave you with this. The NBA draft kicks off tonight. It's at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. The Bucks have two picks in the draft, numbers 23 and 33
okay.
overall, E.
All right.
Ran into Bucks general manager John Horstrud down at Summerfest. I'm like, hey, let me get some thoughts from you for this upcoming draft. What are you going to do with these picks?
So with 23 and 33 for us, it's right in the middle of the draft. We think it's really deep in the middle to have both picks. We have a ton of flexibility. We could move up. We could move down. We could get out.
So thanks, John.
You have all the options.
We could do all the things. Pretty good interview, buddy.
Yeah, well done. Way to really get some info.
No, he was a bit more revealing than that as he went on. He said, look, there are some guys that we like. I could see us keeping both picks. Seemed like, based on what he said, that was the most likely outcome, that they would use both of them.
Interesting, okay.
Didn't rule out the possibility that, hey, just trade these away, like what we got. First round tonight, and it's going to be on ABC if you want to watch it, 7 p.m. our time.
Got all the dirt, man. You're a dogged reporter.
Right? Just worked him hard. All right, tell me exactly what you're going to do. 8:59, Political Power Hour with Steve Scafidi up next.